And if you have a Bible, I'm going to invite you to take them out now and turn to Psalm 78. This is a little bit of a different Sunday for us in that afterwards we're going to have the opportunity to gather as a congregation. We're going to eat and have some food together. Then afterwards we will be having our church business, if you want to call it that. But really, I'll just say our church planning and commissioning almost regarding our budget and regarding our leadership. So that'll be immediately after the service today. But Psalm 78, this is about the most perfect psalm you could ever want to go to whenever you're trying to remember the great works that God has done, because that's what this is all about. In fact, a few years back, I took on this ambitious project in which I was going to, as I was reading the Bible through, I was going to name every chapter, was going to give it a one-word title. And I did it, for the most part. Some are very hard to do that with. But with the Psalms, this one in particular, it was so easy. Didn't even have to work at it. Remembrances. That's what this psalm is all about. A long-running list of the things that God has done. And when the writer Asaph did it, he didn't do it just so they could reminisce and look back and say, boy, don't you remember the good old days? Remember all those times when God was at work? He did it for another purpose. He wrote this to teach. He wanted to make sure that those that were around him and behind him learned of the steady faithfulness of God. And so, and to see the power of God and call upon the people to trust in God. Now, when you go through the chapter, you realize Israel didn't always do that. But nevertheless, that is still the call that he makes. Because true biblical remembrance is not going to be something that just makes you feel sort of nostalgic. It's meant to drive trust. It's meant to spark your next step of obedience in your life and produces in you a full heart of gratitude. But Asaph does a little bit more than merely give us a highlight reel. Because as I said before, a lot of the chapter is what we'll call the bloopers of Israel. And I like the blooper reels at the end of movies. Generally, they're funny. Unfortunately, Psalm 78 is not a funny blooper reel. It's kind of dark when you look back and you see Israel's stark failures. And they failed because they forgot to remember. In fact, that's what the author highlights here in verse 11. He says, they didn't keep
God's covenant law, and he said to them, they forgot his acts and his wondrous deeds that he had shown them. So that, ladies and gentlemen, is what we call spiritual amnesia. And all of us can get it. All of us can experience. Because before we look down our noses at Israel, let's just be honest. We all do the same thing. God moves a mountain for us on Tuesday, and you know, it's kind of like, oh my goodness, we have seen his power, we have seen his might. And then on Thursday, you get that one email and everything comes undone. Or just that one tiny experience, and it's sort of like everything collapsed around you. So we do the same thing, and the call is remember. Remember what God has done. In fact, the word remember comes from the Latin re, means back or again. And I'll botch this, memore, but it's to mention, it's to call to mind. And it reminds me a lot of what we've seen in 2 Peter, where he's constantly saying, I write these things to remind you, even though you already know them. But we need the reminders. So let's just look at the first seven verses of this chapter, beginning with verse 1. And it starts with a call to the people that are his listeners. He says in verse 1, give ear, O my people, to my instruction, and incline your ears to the words of my mouth. Ladies and gentlemen, that is discipleship talk. That's what verse 1 is. Incline your ear. That isn't just a fancy way of saying, okay, y'all, listen up. Listen up real good. It's much more. It's a call to lean in, to listen to what's being said, and it's like, you're ready. Whatever it is, I'm taking this from God, and I'm going to go. I'm going to advance based on the things that I pick up here, because I take it as a word that comes directly from God. Verse 2, he continues, I'll open my mouth in a parable, and I'll pour forth dark sayings of old, which we have heard and known, and our fathers have recounted to us. There's a re again. Again, count it. So he says, these dark riddles and these sayings that you're picking up, they're these precious gems of truth. And I'm not giving you these new, fancy, you know, Johnny-come-lately ideas. These are the things that have been passed down from of old. God told people prior to us, and then they applied it and remembered and passed it on to us to apply it and to remember. Interesting story. One time I was part of a men's Bible study. This is many years ago. And there was this one guy in particular who was sort of an anomaly to me because he wasn't famous, but he was well known, if that makes sense. He was some high commanding general in the army. And as a result of the study, every time the men's study ended, we would all get up and we'd all be shaking hands and brouhaha and everything. But I noticed this guy always did something different. He sat in that chair. And as he sat in that chair, he just looked over the things that he had written and the stuff that we had covered. And I could tell he's just ruminating while it's still fresh. I'm going to absorb this now while I have it before me. And that always marked me. He was owning it from the outset. Asaph, again, he admits, these truths I'm giving you, they're not just the latest hot takes. They were passed down by people who faithfully recounted God's deeds. So the truths here are timeless, and it has an incredible depth. And they're meant to recount those things. That's verse 4. We will not conceal them from our children, but recount to the generation to come the praises of Yahweh and his strength and his wondrous deeds that he has done. So notice again the intentionality here. Discipleship is never accidental. You're not going to drift into it. There's a deliberateness that happens here. And what's implied here is that if we're not actively speaking about God's goodness, then functionally, we're actually concealing it. We're keeping it to ourselves, but not going to make you aware of it. Asaph says, that's not the way I'm going to go. Interesting. I think it was Billy Graham who said, every generation must be one to Christ. You're never done. You're always handing it off. And as soon as the people around you get it, there's another generation coming in behind you. And those are the ones you have to keep passing these things on. And so where does that begin for us? Can I suggest for each of you? It starts at your dinner table. That's where you begin it. You pass it on with those that are closest to you, whether you're in a dorm or you're in a home. In all cases, you're passing these things on. You're talking about what God has done, and you're celebrating, you're rejoicing over that. And you're aligning it to what he has told you in his word. But then it goes beyond that. That's what we aim to do here as a church. We want to bring it through the preaching, but we want to bring it through the summit class that's going on right now downstairs, and the Ridge classes, and the Bible studies that we have during the week. And the goal is not just gather information. You know, we don't do this with Awana just so people can memorize verses. We're putting this in there so that they can take this and own it, be transformed by it, but remind themselves this is what truth is, and then live by that. And that's one of the goals, right? I know that much of today is looking back, but as we look ahead as well, how are you going to be used by God to do this with the people that are around you? How are you going to inculcate those truths and the things that you've experienced and pass them on to others? We need to be thinking about it because we want to be the kind of people who come into these circumstances, and we all do, and we look and we go, I don't know how we're going to get through this. And then you come to the realization after the fact, God got us through that. I didn't see it, but God did, and he made it happen. Verse 5, he established a testimony in Jacob and set up a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers that they should teach them to their children, that the generation to come might know, even the children yet to be born, that they may arise and recount them to their children. So there's this teaching, but there's this living that happens. Because face it, in the practical world, you've got practice and you've got experience. And, you know, if you have any craft or science or skill, it's one thing to watch it on YouTube. But it's another thing entirely to actually live it out and to begin to practice it. Remember when you were in school? You went to the class and you learned the science and you got the theory and you got the math. And then you had to go to lab. I hated lab, mainly for the reports. But you went to lab where you actually applied these things and you began to exercise them. And then you saw how it worked, or in some cases how it didn't. So you knew what to change for next time in order to make something work. And life is lab. We live in the lab. We come here and it's time and with one another, and we're getting fed, we're getting built up. But there's an objective behind it that we then go out and we give them to live it, and we pass that on to others as well. I love what theologian George Swinnick explained it this way, speaking first of Philip II of Macedon. He said this, Philip was glad that Alexander was born whilst Aristotle lived, that he might be instructed by Aristotle in philosophy. He wanted his son to learn from the best. And it's no mean mercy that thy children are born in the days of the gospel and in a valley of vision, a land of light where they may be instructed in Christianity. Do not fail to acquaint thy children with the nature of God, the natures and offices of Christ, their own natural sinfulness and misery, and the way and means of their recovery, the necessity of regeneration and a holy life. If ever they would escape eternal death, how should they ever arrive at heaven if they know not the way thither? Ladies and gentlemen, this is what discipleship does. When we're intentional to pass it on, beginning in our homes, going out from there, through our church, and then whatever sphere it is that God has us in, that we will be faithful in that way. And you pass it on to who? Whoever God puts in your path. You open the door. And Asaph wraps it up by saying in verse 7 that they should set their confidence in God and not forget the deeds of God, but observe his commandments. And then when you keep going, which I won't this morning, but the rest of Psalm 78 reads like a blockbuster movie trailer. But Asaph runs through it all, and he speaks of God's leading Israel out of Egypt, how he brought them through by a pillar of fire at night and by cloud by day. And he talks about how he provided water for them out of the rock and how he gave them manna in the desert in the day. And the various plagues that he brought against Egypt, every single plague defying a specific Egyptian god. God wasn't just random with the ten. He was going after their various gods and showing Egypt, but showing Israel, those are not real gods. And they could look back and they could see his work and his might and his power. And Asaph goes on to then talk about how God had chosen David to be their king and how the nation was going to be shepherded by God. When we speak of God and what he has done, again, I think we're very much like what we've seen in 2 Peter. God tells us that he wants to stir us up by way of reminder, and we need it. We need it constantly. All of us are taught, and all of us continue to learn, and then you continue to learn as you teach and pass on and share with others. It's formulated in your own mind. And that, again, is why we remain committed week after week to coming to you with the scriptures, that all of our ministries ultimately will be oriented and grounded in them, but we want to go beyond merely teaching, but facilitating through your service, through your through these various ministry opportunities such that you actually have to trust God. And then when you do so, now you start to cultivate the stories. God's truth, my life, and how I saw him work, and how important all that is. Well, I want to do something a little different with you today. Because normally we take this time and we exegete the word, and we've done that here for the last few minutes. But now I want to exegete life. And so what I've done is I've got three groups of people that I've asked to come up here and to share a little bit about how God has brought them through and the real world hurdles that each of them has faced, in particular over the last year, but in some cases beyond that. So remembering the faithfulness of God when we're on mission, I've asked Lizzie Thompson, if she would, to come on up here at this time. And Lizzie had the opportunity to go with our church, and they went to Appalachia in a very impoverished area. And in so doing, there's a lot of addictions that are occurring there, and they partnered with a number of different churches. But in and through that, there were some unique things that she and her team faced, and they had to go through. And so Lizzie, I'm going to give it to you so you can just kind of brag on God's faithfulness through it all.
Hello. If you guys don't know me, my name is Lizzie Thompson, and I'm just going to give a quick debrief and hopefully encourage you by sharing a little bit of God's faithfulness that the Appalachia team and I saw this summer. So first, I'd like to briefly tell you about the area that we were working in. Our team was based in Hazard, Kentucky. It's part of the southeast corner of the state. And Hazard has faced incredible economic struggles with the collapse of coal demand from Appalachia. We actually saw a coal train that was near where we were staying, and we were told that it only makes about one run per week, in contrast to when it used to run every single day. With an aging population and general lack of opportunity, most community builders leave as soon as they can, and the people who stay are either unable to work because of age, illness, drugs, or some combination of the three. The town also faces much poverty and homelessness, but it's still doing better than many of its neighboring towns, which are even worse off. This all seems pretty bleak, but as I and the team soon found out, God has not forsaken this area. He is still very much at work. The Blue Ridge Missions team, comprised of the Abdu family, the Statons, Manzos, Katie Jesberger, and myself, were privileged to work with four different churches in our short time in Hazard, and each one is faithfully walking out the Great Commission in whatever way that they can. First was the Maple Street Church of God. This was our home church during our stay, and it was an absolute honor to rub shoulders with these men and women. The church was running a weekly food pantry out of their tiny basement that fed over 200 people every single week. This was all done by a rotating group of about 20 people from the church, maybe seven at a time. These people were mostly elderly. They were not people of means. They had struggles and enormous problems of their own, but they were treating the least of these like Christ by providing for them. And though they will probably never see their reward on earth, I absolutely know that they will in heaven. And the main thing that the gentlemen on our team were working on was doing teardown for a house that was going to be converted into a new food pantry and offices for that church. And so if everything goes well, it will be running this time next year. So please be praying for the construction in that area. Something that stood out to me about this church, and particularly with the food pantry, was that when the week was over, my team was absolutely exhausted. So we went home and continued on with whatever our summers looked like. But for the men and women at this church, they were home. This was not a trip for them. It was their life. And tomorrow morning, they will be at the church early to work on the multiple day process of unloading trucks, organizing and packing food to finally hand it out for hours on Thursday. They love others because they have been shown the love of Christ. So have we. What can we do here and now to bless and serve? We also did some music ministry at a few different locations. I play the violin with Aaliyah Abdu, and we would play hymns. I would try to explain how much that meant to people, but we don't really have a cultural equivalent to it here. But it was very powerful, and the words and truths of the hymns we were playing come straight from Scripture, and God has promised us that his word will not return void. Our guide during the week was named Pastor Steve. He was incredibly active in the rehab scene, and we joked that he was like the mayor because he knew so many people. He helps people through rehab, then disciples them personally in their homes, which we were able to witness a little bit. He has also been bringing them to his church, and they keep inviting their friends as well. All of this is barely scratching the surface of what God is doing in Appalachia. And if you'd like to hear more about the trip, please find me or another team member, and we would love to tell you about everything. Finally, something Leanne mentioned in one of our team meetings is that when we're home, we kind of stay in our own bubble of comfort, and we're also very possessive about it. Why would I need to leave my bubble? I know what I like to do, and that is all that I want to do. But the thing about a missions trip is when you go, you ideally give God that bubble and say that it is his, not yours. After all, you're on the trip to serve, and when you're doing that, you find yourself constantly doing things that you would never do at home. This is great, but it is inconsistent. If you've given your life to Christ, that bubble doesn't belong to you at all, anytime. Your whole life is a missions trip now. Ooh, scary. God is so good. His light is in Appalachia, and the darkness will not overcome it. It was a huge blessing to see his faithfulness there through individuals and churches in just the few days the team spent there. So please continue to pray for the region. Thank you.
All right, well, now I've got another one, and that has to do with the AMAC family. The AMACs have four children, three of whom were adopted. And I thought it'd be good to call them up, and they can talk about a little bit about seeing God's faithfulness when your plans change. And they've certainly changed a few times. I'll hand it over to them.
Thanks, Pastor Jack. Morning, church. Oh, fairly decent response. I got a sticky note. It just says, like, breathe on it, so I didn't write out my... So we'll try to stay on topic. I'm Nevada. This is my wife, Sarah. Like Pastor Jack said, we have four children, three of which are adopted. Our first born child is Lincoln, 7 years old. 4 months older than him is Grayson. And then we have Layla, who is 18 months old. And then we have Kaya, who's 6 months old. Before I get into Kaya and who we adopted earlier this year, I'm going to go back into the Wayback Machine. Sarah and I have been married 22 years now. And you do the math on that. We were married about 15 years before we had our first son. And after unable to have additional children, we always knew God wanted to maybe integrate adoption. It was always on our heart from when we first got married. And so after Lincoln, we decided to adopt Grayson. Grayson, we adopted from Bulgaria when he was 4 years old in 2024. A year after that, we decided to, 2022. Math is hard. So 2022, he was 4 years old. A year after that, we decided we were moved to move into adoption again. And so we began the process in 2023, and in December of 2024, we ended up with Layla, adopting her at birth December 27th. And then last year, in December, Sarah and I were reflecting on just the previous 2 years and our journey through Grayson and Layla and what a joy they had been to us. And we both, it was like a week before her birthday, and we were both contemplating just, we'd love to adopt again. But anybody that's been through the adoption process knows it's a long road, it's arduous, it's stressful, very time-consuming, and usually it takes 1 to 3 years to adopt a child. And so having moved through both a domestic and an international adoption, the cost to our kids at the time were just like, we're going to wait. We're going to pray on it and wait and see what God provides for us. And probably it'd be another year or two, maybe even further down the road before we begin that journey again. About 3 days later, Sarah was out running errands, receives a phone call from the adoption agency that we had adopted Layla from. They called and told us, hey, Layla's biological mom, she's pregnant again. Would you guys be interested in maybe adopting the inbound baby that is due in 57 days? So we're like, all right, no gender. We have 24 hours to make a decision on whether we want to adopt again. Also, the adoption process, to clear through state agencies, adoption agency, clearing all the paperwork and administrative tasks usually takes 4 to 6 months. So if we don't get that paperwork done and in time, the child will, Kaya, when she would be born in February, would move into a foster system until our paperwork and clearance would get through, and then we would take custody of the child. So we're like, all right, kind of up against the clock here. We're a week before Christmas, right, when everybody else for the state and everybody is usually kind of winding down. The year before, we had discovered that with Layla. So we're like, 30-second decision, we both knew that, like, God had put it on our heart earlier in that week, and here he is 3-4 days later, giving us an opportunity to move into that. So instead of moving into a 1 to 3 year process, we have 57 days to clear that hurdle. So for me, that culminating event just between moving through Grayson and then Layla, it was easy when we had so many unknowns of what's the gender, have I had an opportunity to engage the mom, are we going to clear all the paperwork? There's a lot of unknowns, but God up to that point had been faithful for us moving through the first two. It was an easy just, hey, easy in the sense of like, yes, we want to do adoption. Easy in the sense of like, there's a lot of monumental tasks. I'm pretty sure at this point, having moved through the three adoptions, I think Sarah has all the paperwork memorized. So it's amazing to see her kind of move through that and just God align a lot of different people that in our lives here at the church, both in the adoption agency and even within the state, clear a lot of the hurdles for us, be able to get that cleared. And so when we were traveling out to Utah in February, we were getting our clearance paperwork so we could actually adopt. So for me, I just wanted to highlight, God is faithful. He's always moving and preparing. Sometimes I just got to ask myself, am I ready to move in the moment he calls me? And sometimes you don't always see what that end state's going to be, or you know what the end state's going to be. You may not know how you're going to get there, and so you got to just blindly trust fall into his hands and know that he's going to provide for you. I'm going to let Sarah highlight a few of these things.
So I think we would both agree that God has grown our faith a lot in the past years. He has stretched our faith a lot in ways we never could have imagined. And but we can just, looking back, it was hard to decide what to share this morning because we can see his hand and his faithfulness in so many things over really the past 8-9 years, everything from the blessing of Lincoln when we had tried for many years to have children, to adopting Grayson. That's a whole story in and of itself. The trip to Bulgaria and all of the things coming together. And in each of our adoption stories, there have been many reasons why it should not have happened or it should not have worked. And yet, God has been faithful through all of it to build our family, and also just his kindness just was really overwhelming to me thinking about this week in giving us this desire that we had years ago to have a large family in ways that I never could have anticipated or even imagined that we would be here in our mid-40s with two under two and two little boys. So I was just going to share a little bit about the story of the last couple of years with adopting our two little girls. We had started the adoption process really late 2023, and with a domestic adoption, that generally means an infant, and it means being matched with an expectant mother who is wanting to place her unborn child for adoption, and typically that mother selects a family to place her child with. So we had been matched with an expectant mom due with a baby girl in February back in October of 2024. And we were so excited. We were starting to get the nursery ready. We did a little gender reveal with our kids. We were planning that direction. And then in December, our agency called and said that she had changed her mind and wanted to parent her baby, which is amazing for her. We're very happy for her, but also just really disappointed. This was what we thought was God's plan for us, and we kind of felt like we were starting over. And so I just remember going into the nursery, I think it was that day, and just expressing, you know, my disappointment and sadness to the Lord. But then also just, I think I said out loud, just like, I know whatever you're going to do next is going to be amazing. I have no idea what it's going to look like, but and if he was even going to build our family further through adoption. And it was only a few days later that the agency called back and said that they had another mother who had come to them in Utah and was due in 4 days, and could we come to Utah on Christmas and be there to adopt this baby girl. And I think just all of the ways that God has been faithful in the past through building our family, it was a really easy yes. There were a lot of hurdles to cross then. It was just days before Christmas, and we had to rush to get everything arranged. We had to get plane tickets and find someone to watch our kids. But it was incredible how, you know, the song Waymaker this morning, God just made a way for all of the details. When I had no idea how all of these things were going to work out, everything fell into place in incredible ways that we can only see as God's hand, from a place for our kids to stay, our boys to stay, to our friends in Utah just happening to be out of town that week and offering their home and their vehicle for us when we went to Utah to get Layla. There are so many things that just fell into place for that adoption. And as Nevada said, about a year later, we had not even talked about adopting again, but the same week, God just put it on both of our hearts that it was something we possibly would want to do again. And this is another way that I've seen God's faithfulness to us as a family. Nevada and I are really different people, those of you who know us. We have a lot of different opinions about things. But one way God has been faithful to us is that in the area of moving forward with adoption, we have always been on the same page and been aligned. And it was kind of amazing to me that week we had both talked about potentially wanting to adopt again. And throughout this process, I felt like there's been many times my faith has been very small. I've asked God, you know, what he's doing. I haven't understood his timing, and I've sometimes wondered in the past if he was working at all. And yet he's been so faithful and kind to us even in our doubts. And so this was a time we hadn't even prayed about adopting another child yet. And yet God knew that his plan for us. And it was days after that that the agency called again about Kaya. And it's just really beautiful to look back and see how he has orchestrated all of these details. There are so many ways that we can look back and see how he made it possible for these children to join our family when in many aspects it shouldn't have worked. So I think he has brought us through these past experiences and brought us to a point where when we had the opportunity to adopt again, it was a really easy yes, once again, because we've seen him work through all of these other hurdles, and it's a lot. We had to make a decision again within 24 hours. We had to come up with a lot of money within about 2 days and try to arrange travel for an unknown date and time, and yet he was there through all of it and again orchestrated all of the details, culminating in a really beautiful time getting to meet their birth mother in Utah. And we're just so grateful looking back for all of the ways that he has worked through these circumstances. And we're kind of in the thick of it now. Parenting's hard, and parenting adopted kids brings its unique set of blessings and also challenges. But as Pastor Jack said, I think just the act of remembering when I have a challenging day right now, I can look back at all of these ways that God has provided for our family and the ways that he has been faithful to us. And it's such a good reminder to me that he will continue to be faithful even when we walk through the daily grind of parenting and the daily challenges. So did you have anything else to add?
Nailed it.
Okay. Thanks.
We are Americans, and we like control, and we like a plan, and God laughs and then surprises us. Thank you for sharing that. There's another area where sometimes we're really challenged, and that has to do with the area of our health. What happens when we who love to control our health and make our health go great, and we think or we're under the illusion that we control it, and then God opens our eyes and makes us realize we're not controlling anything. Well, Jack and Joan Elwood have been through a number of different things over the course of the last over a year, and I asked them to come and to share about God's faithfulness with their help.
Well, full disclosure this morning, I'm a little nervous, but not for the reasons you might think. I've been in ministry almost 50 years. I'm very comfortable with public speaking. But in the last 3 months, I've been in a battle with metastatic prostate cancer and have gone through 6 weeks of daily radiation. And now I'm on two medications that block all my testosterone. Men, it's really weird. Ladies, you'll appreciate that I now suffer from hot flashes, mood swings. I cry at Hallmark commercials. I don't know what's happening to me. So I'm a little nervous. I'll become one of those weepy preachers this morning, which I hate. But 1 Thessalonians 5:24 says, "Faithful is he who calls you, and he will bring it to pass." This last year has been a journey. Many of you know, about a year ago, I was hospitalized for impacted kidney stones. December, I broke my ankle playing with my grandsons. January, I had a rotator cuff tear and then came down with this prostate diagnosis. Joan will tell you a little about her journey, but it has been a journey. As we've walked through what we would call the valley of the shadow of death, not that we were near death, but we could see it from there, we have discovered a whole new level of God's faithfulness to us as he's been getting us through, but not out of, all of our health challenges.
As Jack mentioned, both of us have had those meetings with our doctors this year that nobody ever wants to have, when they pull out your biopsy and they pull out your blood tests and they look at you and they say, it is cancer, and it's serious. For me, it was breast cancer, stage 3. And for Jack, it was prostate cancer that had metastasized. These are the kinds of diagnoses that really take you deep. You can't have a diagnosis like that and not stop and wonder, God, what are you doing? You have to reflect on your life and think about, where do you go from here in this test that he's brought before you? It forces you to really ask some hard questions. In growing through these circumstances this last year, we've been learning that it takes all the grace that God, his word, and his church can provide. And we've been so grateful for the people at BRBC. You have ministered to us in so many ways with your cards and meals and different things, and we've been very encouraged by the church.
Even though we feel like we've been in the graduate school of endurance and perseverance, we found that it has deepened our faith and clarified our perspectives on what's really important in life. It is football season, so I'll use the analogy that Joan and I in our 70s are in the fourth quarter of life. Some may even say we're in the red zone. But the reality is God is at work and will continue to accomplish his purposes in our life. Like the Apostle Paul said in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, these light, momentary afflictions are preparing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparisons. Every day, I am one step closer to glory. John Piper, the pastor and theologian, I heard a clip from him a couple months ago that said, I love getting older, and he's in his mid-80s. He said, it's because I can look back on 8 decades of God's faithfulness, and when I look to the future, it's a heartbeat, and I will be with him.
I think most of you know that about 3 years ago, I had a liver transplant, and at that time, after I had done some healing, I was really wondering what God was doing and how I was supposed to use the days that I'd been given of good health. And in that process, the Lord led me to what I call the rest of my life verse. And it's Acts 20:24, and it says this: I consider my life worth nothing to me, if only I may finish the race and complete the task the Lord Jesus has given me. The task of testifying to the gospel of God's grace. That line jumped out to me so much as I meditated on that verse, that last line that says it, that I may testify to the gospel of God's grace. And I thought, you know, it's so simple, and I've always made it so complicated. I thought to share Christ, I needed to fall back on the 4 spiritual laws or something like that. And this verse tells me, just tell your story. And I prayed, Lord, give me opportunities. Help me to see the opportunities you're giving me to tell my story. And Jack and I now have spent over, this last year, we figured that we have spent over 100 days at Inova Hospital, being with doctors and patients and staff and nurses. And whenever they look over my file, they always are like, wow, you had a transplant? And now you've got cancer? How are you doing it? And they always ask the typical questions. Do you have a support system? Do you have family that can get you through this time? And, you know, I didn't feel like I could tell the whole story unless I say, because it's just my genuine expression of what God's been doing, is to say, but, you know, I'm so blessed. I have so much. But what got me through this is my relationship with Jesus Christ.
I've discovered during this journey, especially back in May when I had an MRI to prepare for my prostate radiation treatment, discovered a thing. Andrew, you might want to write this down. It's called horizontal worship. I don't know if you've been into an MRI, but, you know, they slide you into a tube with tremendous sounds going on all around you. And so it's a little disturbing, especially when they tie your feet together. That's an interesting sensation. But as I was going in, they said, do you want to listen to music? They had some cordless headphones, and they said, yeah, absolutely. And they said, what would you like to listen to? And I said, do you have anything like Christian music? And he said, yeah, we can do that. So as I'm sliding into the MRI, and you have to sit perfectly still, I lay perfectly still for 35 to 40 minutes, It's an interesting experience, to say the least, but as I went in and they started up, that music came over, and I began to worship. And as I proceeded, I began to tear up a little bit, and those of you who know me, this is kind of weird. And then I began to cry, and then I began to weep. I felt like I was almost in a casket. I was preparing for glory. And in that process, when they slide me out, you know, and the technicians see the tears coming down my face, they get that kind of weird look. Have you ever had that? And they're saying, "Are you okay?" And I said, "I'm amazing." I said, "That was wonderful. Can I do it again?" And they weren't quite sure how to respond to that. And I said, "That was like church." And I said, no, that was like heaven. And I began to realize in the midst of that difficulty what God was doing in me to prepare me for glory.
I think maybe one of the most powerful lessons I've learned in the last year, that every challenge that God allows into our life is an opportunity for us to either draw closer to him or to push him away. And when I first got the diagnosis of cancer, I didn't know what to do with it. After the transplant had been this incredible story of my son's sacrifice and me going really from what I felt like was death to life in the process of the transplant. And I felt like God had tied it all up with a big bow, and it was a great story of God's goodness and his grace to me. But cancer just didn't fit into that. And I was like, "Lord, how do these go together?" And I don't have any fantastic answer to that except for this. God never stops teaching us lessons. It doesn't matter how old we get. We never get to the point where he's like, "Okay, you've had a transplant, you're done." He always has something to draw us to learn more about him and to go deeper with him. I knew the Lord was not robbing me of my future. While I'd enjoy good health and was relishing it, he was not robbing me of anything. He was not mean. He had a plan in this, and I had to protect my heart from being bitter, and I had to lean in to what it was he wanted to teach me through this experience. And if I didn't, then my relationship with him would be diminished. But if I did, then God could do great things in his relationship with me. And that's what happened. Now my mission goes back to Acts 20:24. Now it is not to hold on to my life, but to finish my race and to testify to the ministry of the gospel of God's grace.
Well, there you go, five stories. And every single one of you has a story too. I could call you up if you just had a few moments to stop and think. You could remember and you could relate as well a way in which God has surprised you by his faithfulness and shown his steadiness. And so it's good to pause. It's good to stop. It's good for each of us to purpose to do that. Today on this Sunday, we do it as a church, and I mean, you have a little piece of paper in front of you there that has a number of the different things that we can measure, where we as a church can look back, and we can say, well, we see some of the things and the ways that God has worked, but there's so many things within the church that you just can't measure, like a relationship that gets restored, a new birth, a person becoming a Christian. Someone maturing in their faith. Those are the kinds of things that you can't necessarily just put on a piece of paper. But I can tell you, as your pastor, I see it constantly. A prayer that gets answered after years of going before God. So he's still ever faithful. And it's good and it's right for us to continue to celebrate that and to remember it.